The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition. I can't speak even in the first sentence of the show today. Sorry about that. So in today's EDU show, we're going to continue, so a part two, in our discussion about indexed annuities. Last time was kind of the preliminary information about basically what they are, the chassis upon which they are built. So we didn't really get into the features and how some of the choices that you have when purchasing, I guess is the right word. Some of the choices that you've got when obtaining, maybe that's a better word, one of these annuities. Maybe not you having a choice on each one of these on each individual indexed annuity, but in the world of indexed annuities, these types of features will be available, and Jim's going to get into what those features are, how they work, and explain what it means to the performance or behavior of the indexed annuity itself. So, Jim, you with me?
I am here. Thanks.
Excellent.
Thanks for the semi-introduction. I like it.
Well, thanks.
But I want to welcome everybody to this week's EDU show. It's going to be Annuities Part 2, or equity or indexed annuities. Remember, as we discussed on the first show, the word equity was removed per order of the SEC because insurance people who generally offer these products are not securities licensed for the most part. Some are. And the SEC did not want the name equity being in the title. Not only that, Chris, when you buy an indexed annuity, what formerly was called an equity indexed annuity, was your money ever at risk in the market?
At no time would it be at risk because you're not purchasing something in the market. You're not purchasing an equity.
Exactly, people. That is so basic. Keep that in mind, will you? These are not investments. They are constantly compared to investments. They're constantly compared to investments by the financial press that I think at times are just ignorant and they don't know any better. And I don't mean that in a negative sense to any reporter out there, but they just don't understand. They keep rehashing the same stuff they hear. And they compare them to investments because their index, the interest you earn, is tied to the performance of an external index, so they think it's an investment. But they're also often compared to investments by investment advisors. And the reason investment advisors do it is because an investment will generally always beat an indexed annuity, at least in an up market. So they like to compare them to an investment in a way to get you to buy investments. But they're not an investment. They shouldn't be compared to an investment. They should be compared to the risk-free offerings you have. Principal-protected, risk-free offerings. CDs, savings accounts, maybe, Chris, I'd go out on a limb and say an ultra-short bond fund, maybe even a short-term bond fund, but that's stretching it a little because you're starting to get interest rate risk at that point, and there are no risk with these annuities from any type of change in markets or interest rates. There's no risk. There's obviously insurer risk. The company Right. could go out of business. But I'm talking market risk. There's no market risk with these annuities, even though the interest you earn is tied to an index, an investment index. These annuities are a risk-free offering. They should be compared to what you can get in a bank or a CD, maybe an ultra-short-term bond fund, things of that nature. That's what they are. They are principal protected offerings. That's what you're paying for with the insurance. Oh, that's what you're buying, excuse me, with the insurance company. You're buying principal protection. Now, being an annuity, they're going to have an income benefit as well. We can talk about those on another show. We're not going to get into that today. But I want people to always remember with these annuities, they are not investments. They shouldn't be looked at as an investment, compared to as an investment. They are a risk-free offering. If you have an investment advisor who is bad-mouthing them or comparing them to what he or she can earn you in an investment, they're not being genuine there. They should be compared to what you could earn in a safe, principal-protected, interest-bearing account. Does that make sense, Chris?
It does. Always remember, you know, risk-free is relative. It almost sounds like it's people interpret that as absence of all risk. Nothing's technically 100% risk-free. So we talk about risk-free investments, and you mentioned CDs, so you know, there's the bank is backing it. And then if the bank fails because it's a depository institution, there's the backing of the FDIC and then almost an implicit backing by the U.S. government a lot of times, even though it's not explicit. Implicitly, the government tends to step in to support financial institutions like banks that are in trouble. So, but could all of that fail ultimately, providing some sort of risk? Yeah, arguably, there's even a tiny bit in what we usually refer to as risk-free. So just everyone be fully aware of that. There's no way to eliminate all possible risk out there. And in this particular case, there isn't the FDIC and the government necessarily backing, although the government steps in and supports insurance companies that are having trouble at certain times. Remember 2008. But the insurance company itself is backing it, so you're not exposed to a lot of the other types of volatility or risk that you would have in what we refer to as risky assets that inherently come with some pretty obvious risks. Here, the you know, again, Jim, you mentioned it, the insurance company risk itself, the risk of failure, and then all the backing that would be maybe behind that insurance company, state insurance funds, and then even governmental support if there's trouble, may or may not be there. But, you know, so there's always that extreme tail risk, you might call it. That could be in there, but I just wanted to add a little bit right. more to the technical definition of risk-free.
Exactly. What I was referencing or referring to is market risk and interest rate risk. You are insulated from that. The insurance company assumes it. Right. And because they're an insurance company, they're selling some type of guarantee, and that's the guarantee. With an indexed annuity, you will never earn less than zero. And there's little corny marketing gimmicks out there. Zero is your hero is the more famous one out there that you'll hear some people spouting out. Zero is your hero. The point is, what they're trying to imply is you'll never earn less than zero. But you purchase an index annuity, in my opinion, for one main reason. You want the principal protection. You may be purchasing it for the income benefit. Older indexed annuities that were sold probably 8 to 10 years ago had some really good unique riders that you could add on them with good income benefits. I'm not too enthralled anymore with the income benefits on these products and wouldn't really recommend them from an income standpoint. but from a principal protection standpoint, they are a viable alternative. And for those who are willing to accept zero interest in any given year, for the potential to earn higher than market rate interests in any given year on a risk-free product, these annuities are a compelling option because they have the ability to not only pay you interest in the guaranteed account, which we spoke about last week, and I'll mention again briefly later on in today's show what the guaranteed account is. You'll get that set amount every year in the guaranteed account, but they give you the option in the indexed account to perhaps earn more than the guaranteed amount. And today, we're going to evaluate how the insurance company does it. Last week, Chris, if you remember, I tried to explain what they do with premium dollars and how they allocate not all of it to the bond desk. Because remember, when you buy these annuities, folks, your money gets pooled together with millions of other people. It's not held in a little account for you. It's put in the general account of the insurance company. And most of the money in the general account of the insurance company, Chris, goes into what?
Bonds,
exactly. Insurance companies, we spoke about this in the past, from an institutional standpoint, are the largest investors in bonds in the world. They buy mostly fixed income. But on the indexed annuity side, they direct a little bit of money to their options traders who will buy options on investment indexes. And depending on how the performance of those options go, the insurance company can pay you more interest. So that's how they work in theory. But let's start looking at the practicality side, Chris. Hopefully, listeners understand you would buy these for principal protection. Did I make that part clear?
Yes, abundantly. Not usually mentioned in the marketing of these things, I will tell you that.
Yeah.
When people sell it, when people are out there trying to sell these things, they're usually not referring, they're not describing them as such.
I hate when I hear either ads on the radio. I mostly hear them on the radio. You don't see them on TV at all. But you mostly hear them on the radio and or on the, I don't know if you ever listen to AM radio, but just like we had a radio show. A lot of people have radio shows, so if you listen to AM radio, you hear sometimes investment radio shows, and you'll hear some where people who are pushing these will say, you know, I have a safety-first approach to retirement, or I'm going to do a safety-first approach to your portfolio, and you're going to have market returns with none of the downside. I hate those kind of commercials, Chris, because they're so misleading.
Yeah,
there is no way in heck, you are going to come anywhere near market returns with these products. Absolutely impossible. What you are going to hope for are interest credits, interest payments, whatever verbiage you want to use, that are maybe 3 or 4 basis points higher than what you would get in a traditional bank-like product. That's about what you can hope for. If you think you're going to get market-like returns with no market-like risk on the annuity side, you're crazy. It's not going to happen. You don't understand how the products work. It's not what they're designed for. I often tell my clients, if you go on the index side, the most we can hope for is 3 or 4 percentage points, not basis points. I apologize.
I was going to let you finish and then say that.
I said, basis points. Yeah, that wouldn't be worth
it. Yeah, no.
3 or 4 percentage points more than what you would get in a traditional risk-free product.
Right.
And I think if you go into it with that understanding, you're like, okay, I could buy this risk-free product, the old-fashioned ones, and I know exactly what I'm getting, and it's not much right now. Or, if I'm willing to accept zero in any given year, I have the potential over the life of this product to earn 3 or 4 percentage points, maybe more than what I could get in the risk-free product.
Yeah.
That's how you should be looking at it, folks. But notice I said, Chris, over the life of the product. So let's talk about that. These being annuities, and here's where they differ from CDs, folks. Chris, if you cash in a 7-year CD 2 years into it, what's your penalty most likely going to involve? Would you lose principal or not?
No, you never lose principal in a CD. You're going to give up some of the interest premium that they were rewarding you with by promising to leave it in there for 7 years. You backed out on the deal by pulling the money out in 2 years, so they're going to give you an interest penalty, but the penalty is never big enough to eat into your principal, so you'll never actually lose principal. The amount that you put in is always safe. You'll just give up some of the interest you could have earned if you left it in there the whole 7-year period.
Exactly. But on an indexed annuity, you're going to have a penalty period. They're going to be 3 years. I've seen some with 4 years, but it's mostly 3, 5, 7, and 10. But there are some out there with 4-year penalty period. I am sure there's some out there with a 6-year, but they're not as common. 3, 5, 7, and 10 are the most common ones, but there are 4 as well. And it's the penalty period that you have to pay attention to. Because during that period of time, if you cash in your annuity, you will pay a penalty. So that's the first thing to keep in mind. These annuities, in my opinion, again, their main aim is principal protection. That today is 2021. If you need money in 2026, say, 5 years from now, you know you want a certain amount of money. You don't want to take any risk. Again, these are good tools to maybe evaluate in a positioning standpoint. You have two options. Well, you have many options. But if you wanted principal protection, you've got two options, Chris. You can buy a MYGA, multi-year guaranteed annuity. We spoke about them in the past. And that will pay a fixed amount of interest for the 5-year period, and then it matures and you're all set and done. Or you might be able to buy a 5-year indexed annuity, and you might eke out a little bit more than the MYGA, or you might not.
Right.
You might eke out a little bit more than you would in a 5-year bank CD, or you might not. With the MYGA, you definitely will, because it pays a certain amount of interest every year, and MYGAs always trounce what CDs pay. But with an
trounce is a relative term.
Well, when I say trounce, a bank CD pays maybe 0.5%, 1% today. They don't pay that much. So yes, it is a relative term with interest rates being this low. But with an indexed annuity, you theoretically, Chris, could get zero interest every year. Now, a lot of indexed annuities will have a minimum interest that they will pay you in the event you get zero every year. You have to read the contract. They all do it differently. Every annuity will have the minimum interest rate you'll get. Most will be 1% of 87.5% of what you put in, or 83% of what you put in. Those are the ones that I see the most. 83% of what you put in, or 87.5% of what you put in, they will give you 1% a year on that. So you have to kind of do the math to see in a year with constant zeros. If you're the most unlucky person in the world, and ever since you bought this, the market did nothing but go down, and you stayed indexed to the market, so every single year the market was negative, so you got zero interest, you theoretically could get zero every year. That's an extreme example, but I'm just trying to set the record straight. But what I'm saying is, with these annuities during the penalty period, if you want something sure, you go with the MYGA. If you're willing to take a little bit of, I don't want to say risk, but willing to accept zero interest in any given year, you might earn more with an indexed annuity than you would with the MYGA. But the point is, you would position these annuities, folks, for a reserve pool for money you're going to need in a certain period of time. And you match the penalty phase to that period of time. If you need your money in 3 years, are you going to go buy a 7-year one, Chris?
I hope not.
Exactly. If you need your money in 7 years, you're going to buy a 3-year one? Maybe, because in 3 years you could buy another 3-year or a 4-year one. But you're not going to do it the other way around. If you need your money sooner than the penalty period, do not buy one of these. It's as easy as that. It's not rocket science. Now, the penalty period will always disclose to you what percent of your money will you give up if you close it early. And it could be all different percentages. The person who's offering this to you will have to disclose it to you. You have to initial it that you've read that penalty period. So it's not going to be a surprise to you, folks. It's going to be disclosed to you right there. You'll see it. And if you cash it in during that penalty period, you will pay a penalty that will dip into principal and interest. So do keep that in mind. You do not buy these if you think you're going to need the money during that period of time. And in the suitability, as you open these, Chris, the insurance company always asks you that. Are you going to need this money? And if you click yes, they're not going to open it. They're not going to allow you to do it. They're going to say, nope, sorry, you indicated you're going to need this money, and we're not going to let you open it. So that's the penalty period. One little aside on the penalty period, folks. Some annuities come with market value adjustments, and some do not. Annuities that come with a market value adjustment pay more in interest than annuities that do not come with a market value adjustment. Several states, I cannot remember the states, they do not allow annuities with market value adjustments. You have to buy one without a market value adjustment. I'll explain in a second what an MVA is. But if you live in one of those states, you have no choice. You will get an annuity that pays less interest because the regulators in those states have deemed that they don't want their residents to buy an annuity with a market value adjustment. Market value adjustments allow you and the insurance company to share in the risk of interest rate movement. If the insurance company assumes all the interest rate risk, that would be an annuity without a market value adjustment. If the insurance company is going to assume all the interest rate risk, they're going to give you less interest. If you are willing to assume some of the interest rate risk, they'll give you more interest. And when I say more or less interest, Chris, on the guaranteed account, remember we said these annuities all pay a guaranteed amount or an indexed amount. The rates you will earn are always higher on both the guaranteed or the indexed if you buy an annuity with a market value adjustment as opposed to an annuity without. So what is a market value adjustment? Very simple. All you Vanguardian do-it-yourselfers, you know already. If you buy a bond and interest rates go up, Chris, what happens to the value of that bond?
The value of that existing bond goes down.
Exactly. And if you have a bond and as you own that bond, interest rates drop, what happens to the value of your bond, Chris?
Goes up. They're inversely related.
They're inversely related. Chris is absolutely right. As interest rates go up, the price of bonds go down. If interest rates go down, the price of bonds go up. So what a market value adjustment annuity does is this. Remember I told you, folks, the insurance company takes your money and buys bonds with it. Only a small amount of your money goes to the options trading desk where they hope to earn a little extra return based on the performance of whatever index you are choosing. The vast majority of your money is in bonds. The insurance company, Chris, is assuming all that interest rate risk. If someone, theoretically, what if everyone who bought that tranche of indexed annuities cashed it in early?
That would be very disruptive to their plan.
Exactly. If people sell early, the insurance company has some money. We already talked about this. They've got money coming in, money going out. But eventually they know they may not have any more liquidity, and they've got to go to their bonds, Chris, and sell some of them.
Right, before they were hoping to.
Right. Mm-hmm. And if interest rates, when you bought your indexed annuity, if interest rates go up during that time period, what happened to the price of those bonds that the insurance company has?
they have declined from what they purchased them.
Exactly. So with a market value adjusted annuity, if interest rates go up during that time period and you cash the bond in, you will pay the penalty, which is stated as a fixed percentage, and the market value adjustment. Mm-hmm. And right in your contract, they will tell you how they're going to figure out the market value adjustment, what bond index they're using as the measuring point, Chris, to see if interest rates went up or down. It's all disclosed to you, so you would know. And I have had clients who've had to close annuities sooner than they thought. I have seen on every statement, every single statement that you will get on one of these products, they will show you, Chris, if you cash the annuity in, here is your penalty, here is your market value adjustment. I have seen negative market value adjustments, meaning the client's going to lose the penalty plus an additional X amount of dollars. And I have seen positive market value adjustments. I've seen market value adjustments that have wiped out, Chris, the entire penalty.
Mm-hmm.
With a market value adjustment, you're sharing in the interest rate risk. So it's quite possible if you bought one of these annuities and you bought a 7-year one, say, and you're 4 years into it, Chris, and you want your money out for some reason. If interest rates went down during that 4 years, it's quite possible the market value adjustment would wipe out the penalty you owe. Or you walk away with even more money. The market value adjustment is more than the penalty. In other words, it's positive. It went up. And conversely, it's possible you walk away with even a bigger penalty if interest rates went up during the time period you held the annuity. So that's called the market value adjustment, folks. Most annuities will have both versions. They have to if they want to be in those 6 or 7 states that don't allow market value adjustments. They have to have non-market value adjustment annuities. If the insurance company is assuming all the interest rate risk, they are going to pay you less interest. So market value adjustments and penalty periods is something you guys have to be aware of. But if you understand what the insurance company is doing, they're not being mean-spirited, they're not being nefarious. They're taking your money, they're investing it in bonds. They're taking a little bit of your money and they're putting it in options if you choose an indexing strategy. And they're hoping to earn more than what they're going to guarantee you. That's all these annuities are doing. Anyways, does that part make sense on those two parts?
It does. And I think people forget about that potential market value adjustment. They focus just on the stated penalty, and most people don't realize they could actually be harmed even more. Now, they could benefit, but they're kind of imagining the worst-case scenario is they'll pay the penalty that's described, and they forget about the potential additional, quote, penalty of a negative market value adjustment.
Right. Now, the market value adjustment goes away. What happens at the end of the penalty period with an indexed annuity? We talked on last week's Q&A show with that gentleman who had not necessarily a question on MIGAs, was saying that, hey, you never mentioned MIGAs when you're talking about fixed annuities. I mentioned that when a MIGA, multi-year guaranteed annuity, matures, most will auto-renew within 30 days. And I mentioned that I like one in particular that takes the MIGA, if you don't renew it, and turns it into a liquid annuity, Chris, that you can close at any time. Mm-hmm. It pays a little bit of interest, but you can close it at any time. That's essentially what happens with these indexed annuities. At the end of the penalty period, the insurance company makes them liquid. You can't put money in unless it's a flexible premium one. We'll talk about that in a future show. But for the most part, it just becomes a liquid annuity, Chris, paying a stated amount of interest, or you can continue to index. It's up to you, but it's liquid. There's no more market value adjustment. There's no more penalty period. Now, you might not like the interest. When it becomes liquid, is there more or less risk to the insurance company?
There's more, because they have to be prepared to pay you out at any time.
Exactly. So what will happen, most likely, unless interest rates rise dramatically over the period of time that you own the annuity, that when the penalty period is gone, your interest rates will drop somewhat. I don't want to say they drop through the floor, but they generally will drop somewhat because the insurance company has to adjust for the risk that at any time you can pick up that phone, call them up, and close the annuity. So they can't pay you as much as when they know there's that penalty period. Does that make sense, Chris? Mm-hmm,
totally.
But it becomes a liquid annuity, folks. So don't think that at the end of the penalty period, you got to close it and buy a new one. You don't have to. And I would be hesitant to buy another one because then you got to start another penalty period. You have to make sure if you're using these annuities, we generally use these types of annuities, MIGAs and these types of index annuities in positioning, Chris. We talked about that before. Here's the money that I'm going to spend now. This is the money that I want to have available to me in 5 years. This is the money that I want available to me in 7 years. This is the money I want available to me later. And you can sometimes time that with these. Now, the further you get out, you should get away from using annuities and get more into using a conservative, a moderately conservative style investment account. And of course, if you go way out, this is the money I want in 10 years or 15 years. You can even be in a moderate investment portfolio. But for the shorter term money, Chris, sometimes these products worked fine. So what I like about the indexed annuity is when it matures, you don't have to close it right away. So if the timing is a little off and you don't quite need the money, gee, I thought I was going to need it now. I'm not going to need it for another 6 months. You don't have to worry about where to go. You can keep it there, and chances are the interest you're going to earn in a liquid annuity is greater than what you're going to get anywhere in a six-month hold. Right. And it's just going to say, okay, let me leave it there. I'm going to get a little bit more in interest, and then I'm going to close it because it's completely liquid, no penalties, no market value adjustment. So that's called the penalty period. It's a very important period of time. And again, if you understand what the insurance company is doing, you'll understand why they have those penalty periods in there. Okay, so then how do you earn interest? What are you going to do? What are you going to get? You'll often hear, Chris, on these, oh, they don't pay dividends. Oh, they cap how much you're going to get. Oh, there's going to be a participation rate or a spread. And people start throwing all these, what they perceive to be negatives out at you. They're not necessarily negatives, folks, if you understand what these products are doing. They are not an investment. Let's get that through your head again. Did I mention that yet, Chris?
I think I heard that once before.
Did I mention it? Probably no more than once.
No.
Shouldn't have been, because this is the second time I mentioned
it. Doesn't hurt to say it again.
Yeah, okay. I got to do it one more time. Remember, we got to do it three times. But these are not investments, folks. So don't compare them to an investment. If you want a stated, fixed, non-variable, totally known and predetermined interest rate, these annuities will pay it. It's called the declared rate account or the guaranteed rate account. They will all pay a stated amount every year, and it'll begin on your anniversary. The anniversary is whatever day the insurance company got your money. Today is, I think, February 16th. So if you opened one today, your anniversary would be February 16th of 2022. 1 year later, every year, they will tell you what the fixed or declared or guaranteed account will pay. And it's your choice to allocate some or all of your premium dollars into the fixed account if you'd like. So these annuities will always pay you a fixed amount. But they also allow you to index some of that, as we said, to a market index. I mentioned on the last show, I like the annuities that use well-known indexes. Remember that, Chris?
Yeah, then you can look it up independently and not depend on them to give you their description of their made-up index, which there are those out there.
There's a ton of annuities out there with proprietary indexes that are from various companies with unique sounding names that are impossible to track, and they're just, I don't like them. Now, other people do, I don't. I like simplicity, folks. If you don't understand, anyone knows that about me. Even though I go on and on and on, I also like simplicity. Our whole retirement planning philosophy is based on simplicity. Most of the index that I've used when I've done these, the S&P 500, because everyone knows it. It's right out there. All you Vanguardians can track it right with your S&P 500 index ETF. It's just so easy. You know what the S&P is doing. You sometimes see it indexed as well to the NASDAQ 100 or to the Russell 2000. And I also mentioned that sometimes you can index to actual ETFs like the GLD ETF that tracks gold and a couple of the ETFs that track different sectors. I like to choose annuities with indexes or ETFs, Chris, that everyone knows.
Yeah.
Okay. So with the indexing option, you can choose to put 100% of your money in the indexing option, 10%, 20%, 90%, you can choose. And if your indexing option offers multiple indexes, you can put some in the NASDAQ 100, some in the Russell 2000, some in the S&P. You could put some in the fixed account, Chris, some in the S&P. All different ways. You're allowed to change it every anniversary. Does that part make sense?
Totally.
During the periods between anniversaries, you cannot make changes to your allocation.
Right.
That's called point to point. You have to hold it from one point to the next point. So P to P, if you often see it in initials, but it stands for point to point. Most indexed annuities will have a point to point 12 months long. However, I have seen annuities with 18, 24, 36 months long. The longer you go on the point to point, Chris, the higher the interest rate, interest credits you can receive based on the performance of the index. But you got to wait so long to lock it in. Again, not a fan of those. They sound so tempting that they're going to give you a much bigger amount of the index's return. But you got to wait so long to lock it in, Chris. And you have to wait to the actual anniversary. I like the shorter time period because once you lock in the interest, folks, you can never lose it.
Right.
It becomes part of your initial contribution. So if you put in $100,000 and you earned 4%, you now have $104,000, and at your anniversary, that becomes your new protected amount, and you'll never lose any of it.
Kind of ratchets up like a roller coaster. As you're going up the hill, you hear that clackety-clackety sound. That's that little mechanism that makes it that you can't go back down. If something happened and you stopped going up and it's going to keep it from going back down. That's kind of the idea here. It locks it in so that you can keep those gains that you've got, those interest credits that you've gotten so far.
Right. So you got to pay attention to the length of the point to point. Again, most are 12 months, but I have seen different lengths. I favor the shorter 12-month one, but again, that's just me. I'm a little biased, I guess, but I favor the shorter one. 18 months, I have used those in the past. I have seen them. They're not as common anymore, mostly because they're not an even round year and it gets very confusing. But I tend to favor the shorter term ones, Chris. So that's the point to point. And then how would it work if you're in the indexing one? Well, the insurance company will give you the value of whatever indexing you are tied to on the day of your anniversary. So you'll get a letter from them saying, hey, you're in the S&P 12-month point-to-point. That means 1 year from your anniversary, point-to-point, and they'll tell you what the S&P was on that date. You'll get it right in your letter. And then you can track it all on your own, folks. And at the end of 12 months, they're going to look at what the S&P is trading at. And then they're going to tell you how much the S&P is up. They are only looking at the price change.
Right.
They do not factor in dividends. But they don't factor in dividends because they're using options and you're not getting dividends. It's tied to the options market. And it's not a negative. I hear so many investment advisors saying, Chris, you don't want to buy those indexed annuities tied to the S&P. You're not going to get any dividends. You're not buying a darn investment.
Right. Not invested. Yeah. Well, like they use it as ammunition as their complaint or their description of why it's not as good as investments. And it's right. That's you're not going to get dividends. But then they better list all the reasons, you know, all the reasons why you might want to do this. They usually kind of lighten up on those.
Again, to me, it's simple. Don't overanalyze it, folks. Right. If you know you need some money in a certain period of time, you don't want to take any risk for it, but you'd like a greater return than what you can get in current interest-bearing accounts, that's where these work. That's how they work. They're not an investment. The indexing option just gives you the potential to earn 3 or 4, maybe 2, 3, 4 percentage points more than what you can earn on the fixed guaranteed holding. That's all it's giving you, is the potential of earning more. That's it. But it's not an investment. So I personally don't think the fact that dividends are not factored into it are any big deal. It's not an investment. Why should you get dividends, Chris, if you don't own an investment? You don't own any of the stocks in the S&P 500 if you own one of these indexed annuities. Why should you get dividends?
Makes sense.
And the insurance company doesn't get the dividend. Everybody thinks, oh, the insurance company keeps the dividends. No, they don't.
Right.
They don't own the stocks either. They got an options trading desk. We're trading the value of options. So there are no dividends. Keep that in mind. It's the price change only. Now, Chris, let's just say the S&P price change only is up 10% in your 12-month point to point. Are you going to walk away with 10%?
No.
Exactly. Not even close. So get that through your head. Not even close. You're not going to get close to what the S&P is up, because the insurance company is going to put in a series of restrictions to control how much return they have to give you. And these restrictions change every year. They intend to hold them steady during your penalty period. If you buy a 3-year index annuity, they intend to hold these steady for 3 years. A 4-year, they intend to hold it steady for 4 years, so on and so forth. But they do reserve the right to change them. And we talked on last week's show, it is not interest rates alone that change it. It's the volatility in the equity markets and the cost of options that sometimes force insurance companies to change how they credit what they're going to give you. But how does the insurance company control this? Because they obviously can't give you 100% of the return, folks, and none price change return. And none of the risk. They can't do that. They can't make bread from a stone. I mean, what am I trying to say? They can't make bread from a
I don't think there's bread involved.
No, it's making bread from something. You can't get, or is it milk from a stone? Milk from a stone.
Blood from a turnip. You can't get blood from a stone.
No, I think it's milk from a stone.
Any of those work.
Whatever. Okay. So bread's not involved.
You're not going to get much from a stone. Definitely not bread.
Okay.
Although there's stone ground wheat, which you could use in bread.
True. All right. Now we're getting a little esoteric here, and someone's going to accuse us of going on and on and on. But what I'm trying to get at, folks, the insurance company just can't give you 100% of the return. And no risk. People would buy these till the cows come home if that's the way they work. Right. Hey, you're going to get all the return of the market and none of the risk. It doesn't work that way. So how does the insurance company control it? Three main ways, with what they call the cap, the spread, and the participation. So we're going to go through these three, and I think that'll wrap it up for today. How much time do we have left?
Oh, about 10 minutes or so.
Okay, we'll go through these three. The cap, that's the most common one you'll see. Now, the reduction of the gross return of the index. Remember, the index is only price change only, no dividends. And in my hypothetical, Chris, 10% return, say, from the day you opened it to 1 year later, okay? 10% return in the price change of the S&P. Follow me there?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they've got to reduce that down, Chris, because they can't give you everything. They're not buying enough options in order to be able to do that. So they can't give you all of the 10. So how are they going to whittle it? Cap rate, spread, and participation rate. Mm-hmm. You may be subject to all three, or you may be subject to one of them or two of them, or you may be subject to none of them. You'll hear no cap. Those, I don't want to really say those annuities are bogus, but they tend to be bogus. They tend to be tied to those unique indexes that no one can really track anyways, and you don't know what the hell's going on inside them.
And they hide the limitation inside of those indexes.
Yes, they're being limited, trust me. And oftentimes, I apologize, I said you might not have any of those. You might hear it advertised as no cap, but chances are there'll be a spread or a participation buried in there as well. So what is the cap, spread, and participation? The most common limit is a cap rate. And you often will see just a cap rate. And you won't see a spread in participation, but you might. The cap rate just says the maximum amount they're going to give you. Mm-hmm. We will give you 100% of the price change. And let's just use the S&P 500 as our index du jour for this example. So you will get 100% of the price change in the S&P up to 4.5%. Just making that up. Up to 4.5%. So if the price change of the market, Chris, was 10, how much are you going to get?
4.5.
If the price change in the S&P was 3, how much are you going to get?
3.
Exactly. If the price change in the S&P was negative 20, how much are you going to get?
0.
0. 0 is your hero. If the index is negative, you don't lose anything, obviously, because your money's never at risk. You just don't get any interest. So a cap rate sets the maximum amount in the price change of the market you will receive in interest. You don't get it as a cap gain, folks. It's not a cap gain because it's not an investment. It's interest. So you will simply get the interest up to the cap rate. If the index has not earned the cap rate, you won't get the cap rate. You'll get whatever the index earned. But if the price change of the index is greater than the cap rate, you are capped at the cap rate. Now, these annuities, Chris, intend to hold the cap rate steady for the penalty period time. But do they have the right to change that every year, Chris?
They do.
They do. What I can tell you they don't do, it's not a bait and switch. You'll hear that all the time. Again, the naysayers will say, oh, you don't want to do that. They're offering you 4.5%, but I'm telling you, 1 year later when they can change that rate, boom, they're going to drop that damn thing down to 1% if you're lucky. Doesn't work that way, folks. It's not what the insurance company is trying to do. And the reason they don't do that, they know you'll never do business with them again. And they know the people who might be offering them, all the agents out there and the advisors and the brokers and the producers and all the people who are offering these, they'll never do business with that company again because that client's never going to do business with them again if that bait and switch was being done. Insurance company honestly has every intention of trying to honor that cap rate. The cap rates change constantly, but when you buy yours, your cap rate is kind of set. I don't want to say locked in because it's not, but it's set, and the insurance company tries to honor that. Prior to you buying it, the cap rates can go higher and lower all the time. I won't say every week. They don't do it as often. MIGAs change every week, their interest rates. But these cap rates can change several times a year, Chris. You'll see the insurance companies come out several times a year and adjust the cap rates on new ones.
Right.
But yours is intended to be honored, but the insurance company will lower them if they have to. So the cap rate, again, fairly straightforward. It's the easiest to understand. It just caps out how much you're going to get if the price change, no dividends, just price change of, in my example, the S&P, reaches that. Now, one unique feature, let's just say you have a 12-month point-to-point, Chris, okay,
mm-hmm.
with a 4.5% cap rate, you are 7 months into the 12, and the S&P, which is the index we're talking about, is now up 5%. Is your 4.5 set? Are you good to go? No.
No.
You have to wait till your anniversary to get that 4.5%.
Right.
Your 4.5% is locked in on your anniversary. So if you're 7 months in and the S&P is up 5, you're not getting any more. If the market keeps going up, there's no potential there for you. The only potential is what, Chris?
Going back down towards zero.
Going back down. So you have to remember, unlike an investment, because this is not an investment, unlike an investment that if you knew, hey, this investment can't earn any more, the only thing you can do from here is go down. Do you want to hold it or do you want to sell it? What would you do? You'd hold. Sell the investment.
Yeah.
If they told you you can't make anything else on this for the next 5 months.
Right. It can only go down.
And it can mm-hmm. only go down from here. Would you like to hold it or do you want me to sell it and lock in this gain? You're going to sell it. Okay, but that's not how these indexed annuities work. You got to wait to your anniversary. Now, the good news is several companies now have annuities that allow you to actually lock it in. So when you hit that amount, we'll talk about these annuities in the future, folks. They're a little bit different than what I'm describing, so I don't want to get into them, but I promise you I will do shows on those annuities. And what they do is they allow you, when you cap out, you lock it in. Because the only other way you can go, Chris, is down. And then what happens is when your anniversary is hit, the interest is credited, and a new 12-month period begins, and you start all over. Now, these are new. I say new. They're a couple of years old. Not every company has them. It's kind of a unique feature. But it's really grown in popularity, and you can probably understand why, correct?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it's very, because then you don't have to worry about things going well on your point, on your year anniversary.
Once you hit out, this is the most I can get, why own it anymore, folks? Lock it in, take the rest of the year off, don't worry about it, and then on your anniversary, it starts all over again. And these annuities, there's some ifs, ands, and buts with these annuities. They do work the way I described, but they are an offshoot. They're a hybrid, if you will, of an indexed annuity, so I've got to really explain them on a separate show, and we'll do another show on those. But what I'm hoping is this feature that a few carriers have come out with bleeds its way into the traditional indexed annuities and allows this type of locking in. So anyways, that is a feature that is relatively new. It's interesting. It's compelling. And we'll see how well it expands. So hopefully everyone understands cap rates. Do you have any mm-hmm. questions on it? Or
no.
Do you think I explained
that
it
makes
okay?
Sense. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So participation rate. Let's go to that one first. Participation rate. What do you think that involves, Chris?
Well, here you're going to participate in something less than 100, excuse me, frog in the throat, going to participate in something less than 100% of the price change of the index.
You want me to take over
yeah.
while you get
yeah,
that
wow, drink? That was just came out of left field.
Okay, while Chris is over there dying, what a participation rate does, you'll often see, sometimes you'll see them in conjunction with cap rates. Sometimes you'll see a cap rate significantly higher than another annuity and think, oh, I want to go with that annuity. It's got a much higher cap rate. Look at this one's paying 4.5, but this one's paying 7. And you think, wow, I'm going to go with that. Well, you got to look under the hood a little. You got to always ask whoever's offering you these annuities, What is the cap? What is the spread? What is the participation?
Yep.
The participation is how much of the index return do you get to participate in? Let's say you have a 70% participation rate, Chris, with the S&P 500 12-month point-to-point. At the end of 12 months, the S&P is up 7%. What is your participation? Up 10%. What is your participation?
Well, if it's up 10 and you're 70% participation, you're going to get 7%.
Correct.
Assuming you're not hitting some sort of cap before that.
But, correct. Mm-hmm. So the participation rate is how much of the index you can participate in. Most annuities will say this, Chris. 100% participation, 4.5% cap in my example. The 4.5 can be any number that the insurance company wants. That's telling you you're going to participate in 100% of the index capped at 4.5.
I think those are more popular because from a marketing approach, it just sounds really good to be able to say that.
100% participation.
Oh, you're going to participate 100%.
Exactly.
Oh, by the way, there's a cap.
Right.
You know.
So 100% participation. Now, sometimes you will see cap rates, like I said, significantly higher. I gave an example of what if there's one with 7 and one with 4.5, which one's better? Well, you got to dig a little deeper. What does the 7 have as far as participation and spread? Well, the participation might only be 50, 60, 70%. Follow me?
Mm-hmm.
So they might be willing to give you 7%, but they're only going to allow you to participate in 50% of the return. So if the market was up 10 point to point and you had a 50% participation, you only get 5. And if you had a 7% cap, how much are you getting, Chris? 5.
5 still. Mm-hmm. Because you haven't hit the cap.
Right. Even though the market was up 10 and you have a 7% cap, you're only getting 5 because you only participate in half. So you can see when you start getting into participation and spreads, it starts getting complex and yours truly starts not liking the product. I like the simple, straightforward, easy to understand. I like the cap with zero participation and zero spread.
100% participation.
Yes, 0% participation.
that wouldn't be a lot of fun.
That would not be good. Thank you for picking up on that.
Sure.
But that's participation rate, folks. Not all annuities will have it. Not all annuities have a cap. They could say an uncapped strategy with a 10% participation. They're not kidding you. It's uncapped. You can earn as much as you want, but you're only going to participate in 10% of what the market is up. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So oftentimes when you see an uncapped strategy, they might have a participation that's going to limit how much they're going to give you. And again, folks, the insurance company is not being nefarious. These are not investments. They're just a unique way to maybe get a little bit more interest than you're going to earn in a principal protected safe holding. That's all they are. It just, you got to really compare these to a traditional fixed annuity, whether it's a MYGA or just a fixed annuity, and ask yourself, Chris, is it really worth the headaches to maybe eke out 1, 2, 3 percentage points more? You might not think so. I mean, if the MYGA rates, which are fixed and guaranteed, are not that far from the cap rates, it may not even be worth it. Just
right.
Go with the MYGA and be done with it. It's so much simpler and easier. But these indexed annuities do exist, and I'm just trying to get people to understand how they work. So a spread, it's the final one we're going to do as we wrap up on today's show. So the spread, again, is a way of the insurance company to control their risk and limit your return. That's how the insurance company controls their risk. They limit how much your return is. So the spread is often presented as a percentage point. 1%, 2%, 3% spread. And what it simply means is this. If, again, go back to our S&P, 12-month, point-to-point, up 10%, but with a 4 percentage point spread, what do you think that means, Chris?
you're only going to get six.
Only
the amount above the spread.
Yep. Insurance company subtracts out the spread. So you might see a 1%, 2%, 3 percentage point spread. You usually see them in round amounts. You never see like 1.87% spread or something like that. I suppose they could have it, but you usually see them in round percentage point numbers.
Yeah.
I get a spread of 1, 2, 3, 4. Spread always comes out first, then you get what's left.
Yep.
You could see a spread with a cap. You could see a spread with a participation rate. You get 70% participation and a 2% spread. So again, if the S&P is up 10 and you have a 70% participation, your net amount, or as you're trying to get to your net amount, the gross is 10. Your first net is 7. Then it's got a 2 percentage point spread. You take out that, you walk away with 5.
Yep.
So cap, participation, spread. You'll see one or all three in your annuity. You just got to understand how they all work. The insurance company can change them every anniversary. I cannot stress this enough. Their intent is not to change them, but they do reserve the right to change them in order to react, not necessarily to movements of interest rates, but to volatility in the options market. That's what drives a lot of the decision of the insurance company to change those. I have seen insurance companies honor these caps, spreads, and participation rates in very volatile markets, though, Chris. And I have seen other companies lower them. And when they do lower them, folks, I usually see them dropping 25 or 50 basis points. It's not massive, massive drops. And by 25 or 50 basis points, I mean 1/4 or 1/2%, sometimes just 1/10%, Chris. I don't see them moving much if I see them moving, but sometimes I see them moving. Sometimes I see them staying steady.
Yep.
Does a lot of that make sense?
It all makes sense individually. Warning or recommendation to people is make sure you have a reason for using such a thing. If you can accomplish what you need with something simpler, that's generally my preference, and I think usually yours as well. Keep it simple when possible, but there can be reasons that you can identify that these and other things that we've talked about on here and things we haven't ever even talked about can be appropriate in your circumstance. So it really just depends on what you're trying to do. And I think this gets at something we remind people of all the time, kind of changing your mindset from accumulation phase to spending. You've got to get this nest egg that you've built prepared to be spent. It isn't all about long-term investment gains anymore. Unless that's your goal, live as a pauper, try to build your nest egg as big as possible to leave it to somebody else. That's not the kind of planning we do, but it isn't invalid. Some people, that is their goal. If it's, I've built this nest egg and I now want to spend it in retirement, then you have to look for appropriate positioning for your assets. And some of that positioning might be in some kind of principal protected piece that you've identified spending in the somewhat near term, not tomorrow. You know, this wouldn't be appropriate for spending you need this year. That should be in cash or something really close to cash. But if you need identified, hey, we want to spend this, that, and the other thing here in about 4 or 5 years, what should we do with this money? Certainly wouldn't have invested like you would in the accumulation phase. Should position it. Something like this might make perfect sense, or something simpler might make perfect sense. But that's kind of why we talk about these things, is these are the types of things that, while generally inappropriate, I'll go out on a limb and say that, generally inappropriate in the accumulation phase, can be a nice little tool in the spending phase or the distribution phase.
I agree wholeheartedly. If you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, even early 50s, and you are decades and decades, or in the case of someone in their 50s, 10, 12, 15 years still from retirement or needing to spend from the portfolio, I don't feel these indexed products are appropriate at all. You should be buying an investment. You should buy a conservative allocated investment, I think, would wallop the socks off of one of these. I just don't feel they are appropriate for that. and it angers me when I see them being sold for this purpose. They're not designed for that. If you're in the accumulation phase, I don't think you should be considering this, unless you're in the accumulation phase, but within that phase, you need money in 5 years and you just don't know where to put it. Again, these to me are to be matched to the penalty period. Okay, I need my money in 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. I need my money in that period of time. You can match to the penalty period. Just because you need your money in 10 years, folks, doesn't mean you buy a 10-year indexed annuity or even a 10-year MIGA. I would look more at the 3 or the 5 year and keep renewing them, especially when you start to see the rates. You just don't get enough in these low interest rate environments, Chris, to warrant anything more than 5 years. You'll see that if you ever started running quotes on these. Right. I don't want to go too deep down that. Mm-hmm. But I agree with Chris. These are not appropriate for accumulation savers. They're appropriate for decumulation savers who are trying to position assets to be consumed. Remember, listeners, y'all are Vanguardian do-it-yourselfers. I know you are. 80% of people who listen to this, you get your money at Vanguard. Is it Bogle or Bob?
Or Fidelity or Schwab.
Or Schwab. But yeah. You're mostly do-it-yourself Vanguardians. You're bogleheads. And to you, it's all about accumulation, and assets and growth. And you talk about your money and your portfolio. When you retire, stop calling it that. It's deferred spending, and it's time to start consuming it and spending it. And if you want to spend $100,000, you want to make sure there's $100,000 there to spend. And it's not going to be very fun if Wall Street takes 10, 15, 20% of it, so you don't get to spend the full $100,000. So you peel off a little bit of your portfolio, and you might put it in something like this. But as Chris also said, and hopefully you gathered from me, I'm just teaching you guys about this. I am not pushing these. I like simplicity. I like MIGAs right now. Mm-hmm. Nothing simpler and easier than a MIGA. But an indexed annuity has the potential to maybe pay a little bit more than a MIGA. But it also has the potential, Chris, to pay less right. If you get a couple of zeros in there. Yeah.
Not a loss, but less.
And is it worth it? Mm-hmm. I don't know. You got to think about that. Now, I'll also say, folks, about 6 to 10 years ago, indexed annuities were a lot better than they are today. And the reason they're not as good today, interest rates are so darn low.
Yeah.
They're so darn low. It's just they're not compelling to me right now. They're just not. But I'm trying to teach you guys how they work. Because if interest rates can get back up, I was surprised to see the 10-year was above 1 today. If they can get back up in a couple of years, maybe they'll be compelling again. But for those of you who feel much more optimistic about the equity markets than I may, my bias tends to be very conservative, these could be a compelling place. Okay, there's one more thing I just want to catch up real quick because we talked about cap spread and participation. I totally forgot to talk about another one, Chris, that is wicked easy to talk about, a trigger. Do you have any idea what a trigger is? I know, and the thing is, folks, I'm not trying to trick Chris. He knows Social Security inside and out. He doesn't know these annuities too well. So I'm not tricking him. I'm just seeing if he knows what a trigger is. Do you have any idea what a trigger would be?
I'm 90% sure that's where the index has to perform to a certain level, and then suddenly you get something, but you get nothing until it hits the trigger.
Close. I wouldn't give you the whole cigar, but I'd break the cigar in half.
Okay.
And I'd give you one of those ends. A trigger is just like the trigger of a gun, folks. You just press it, boom. It's off. There's no going back. So a trigger is this. Let's go back to our initial assessment, Chris. But I'm going to change one thing. We have a 12-month point-to-point to the S&P. Follow me?
Yep.
With a 4.5% trigger. Not a cap rate. Mm-hmm. 4.5% trigger. And the market is up 5. What do you get?
5.
Nope. 4.5% trigger. Market's up 5. What do you get? 4.5. See, you thought It has to go through the trigger, and then you get whatever is there. It's not how it works.
Oh, it triggers and caps at the same spot? That I didn't know. If that's how it behaves, that I didn't understand the capping part.
A trigger, folks, no matter what the index is up, you get 4.5. If the index is up 3, you get what, Chris? 4.5. If the index is up 5, you get 4.5 in my example.
Well, it doesn't have to hit the trigger like when you said the 3.
No, does not. Does markets up and the we'll stick with the S&P. I thought this was going to be easy, but I'll explain it. The S&P right, go to Yahoo Finance or go anywhere. Just tell me what the S&P is up right now today. What is it at?
That's down today.
Oh, what is it down to today?
it is just barely. It's down 0.34. So just a few cents.
Okay, but give, what are the six numbers? Because it's going to be four numbers 0.22. What is it?
It's 392.30 today.
392?
That's the SPY, the ETF.
3092.30. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the S&P, let's say you opened an annuity, folks, and you indexed it to the S&P. He's given the SPY, which isn't quite the S&P, but let's just say the S&P.
The S&P itself is 3932.59.
Okay. Well, I didn't write that down. I'm going to go to what you originally wrote down. So, folks, let's teach you triggers, because the trigger is unique, and you'll see them a lot. So let's say the S&P is at 3092.30 on the day you opened it, Chris. Okay? 12-month point-to-point tied to the S&P, price change only. 4.5% trigger. Not cap, trigger. 4.5% trigger. 1 year later, the S&P is at 3092.31.
Oh, it triggers off of a gain. Mm-hmm. So as long as there's any positive performance, you get the trigger.
Yep.
But if it drops, you get nothing.
Exactly.
Got it. That's not how I understood it to work.
If the
that makes sense now.
If the market is up, anything, it
you get the trigger.
Triggers, and you get the full amount.
Got it.
So the trigger is different than a cap. now you're getting it to me. Goodness. You will never see, Chris, an annuity with a 4.5% cap or a 4.5% trigger, your choice. The trigger will always be lower. So if the cap is 5, tied to the traditional S&P, the trigger is probably 4.5 or 4 or something like that. The trigger is always less because it's a little more risky to the insurance company, is it not?
Well, yeah, because they run the risk of giving you 4.5 when it's only up 2.
Or 0.01%.
Right.
The insurance companies use 2 decimal points, folks, in the measure. Most of them do. Some could use less, but most of the ones that I've seen use 2. So that's why I liked when Chris read to me 3092.30. I thought, oh, this is perfect. So 3092.31, boom, that trigger went off. And you get the 4.5 or whatever the trigger rate is. So that's another way of doing it, is the trigger. I have never seen a trigger used in conjunction with a spread or participation rate, because it's a moot point, Chris. The index is up anything out to that 2 decimal points, it triggers. Yep. So there's not going to be a spread and a participation rate. So it's not saying that they couldn't exist. I've just never seen them. But a trigger is another crediting option out there in addition to cap, spread, and participation. So I wanted to throw trigger there. But hopefully, folks, you guys got something out of this. I'm just trying to teach you how the products work, trying to get you to understand they're not the best thing next to sliced bread that a lot of insurance-focused planners do, and try to get you to understand they're not an investment. You shouldn't get scared into buying one. Oh, you don't want to be in the market. I'm going to give you market returns and none of the risk. Throw those bums out. They're just trying to sell you a bill of goods. These are not an investment that should be loved, but they're not an insurance product that should be hated. The investment people who compare them to investments and say you should hate them because they're not going to do as good as an investment. Well, of course they're not going to do as good as an investment. They're not an investment. How could they do as good? So don't fall victim to either side. To me, they're principal protected. They're complex, as you can see.
Mm-hmm.
MIGA's a heck of a lot easier, multi-year guaranteed annuity. I would favor the MIGAs first. But if these become compelling again, Chris, these products, when I first started following them, had cap rates of 10-12%. It was outrageous. Interest rates and volatility have killed that. And now you get cap rates of 3-4%, but you can get a MIGA rate of 2.5-3%. You got to kind of figure, is it worth the extra headaches and potential of getting less when I should just lock it in with the MIGA? Right. So Chris and I see eye to eye. We like MIGAs for simplicity, but I'm trying to teach you guys how these work, where they fit in, and what they're all about. Because you hear a lot about indexed annuities, but you probably never really knew how they worked. Hopefully now you understand a little bit more of how they work.
Yep. Perfect. Well, thanks for joining us again here on the Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition. Do we know what next week's EDU show is about, or is it going to be a surprise for everyone, including me?
Well, we've got Pete is interested in coming on and doing some estate planning shows. Mm-hmm. Bob is going to come on and do a couple. Well, he won't do an EDU show. He's going to do a couple of Q&A shows. Pete's going to do a Q&A show. I know Greg is going to be coming on with an EDU show shortly about our hybrid approach, which will teach people who are self-funding their LTC coverage, their aging assistance, what we call a hybrid strategy. So there's a lot of unique things that we're going to be coming up and teaching people about. But hopefully these past two shows on indexed annuities got you thinking and understanding how they work a little bit better.
Perfect. If you have a question you want to submit for a Q&A show, best way to do that and also to learn about us would be go to the website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. On there, there's a contact form for submitting a question or comment of some kind. There's also more information about what we do and who we are. You can also send questions directly to Jim's email, jim@jimhelps.com. And so we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show. Thanks again for listening.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.